Pictures celebrating a love affair that's been going on for 25 years. Los Angeles and KBC. Let's keep on caring. Let's keep on sharing with
Bill Jenkins.
Welcome to another Saturday night on KABC. I am Bill Jenkins, and this is Open Mind, and we want to stretch yours just a little bit. Give you something new to think about, something very viable to think about that probably will make sense if you think about it. But you're going to have to think differently, and indeed, tonight, you're going to have an open mind. So open it up. I want to read something out of the foreword of a book that kind of caught my attention. Long before man warred with man, the gods battled among themselves. Indeed, it was the wars of the gods that the wars of man began. And the wars of the gods for control of this earth had begun on their own planet. It was thus that mankind's first civilization succumbed to a nuclear holocaust. This is fact. Not fiction. And it's all been written down a long time ago in the Earth Chronicles. How about that? A nuclear holocaust? We can even pinpoint the time tonight, and we have the author of the book called The Wars of Gods and Men making an encore appearance on Open Mind with us. Say hello to Zachariah Sitchin. Zachariah, welcome to Open Mind.
Good evening, sir.
The wars of gods and men. Has this been going on all of this time?
Well, it's been going on for a long time. The wars of men certainly are still with us.
Oh, yes, indeed they are. What is it, 38 of them raging right now?
Well, who can count?
Who can count and who can keep up with them? Zachariah, when we first talked to you, we talked about an enormously important book, I thought, called The 12th Planet, and then there's been Stairway to the Heaven. You have been delving into some ancient writings, have you not?
Yes, I've been delving into ancient writings, Bill, and I have spent, I could say, most of my lifetime. I was about to say my adult life, but I thought I'd better say my lifetime because many ask me, how did I happen?
Mm-hmm.
The word is in quotes, you know, happen. How did I happen to get interested in the subject, and how did I come about to do all the research, which, as you can see, and your listeners who have seen the books or read them can see, the immense research that was required for it.
It is extensive.
And it really, Bill, literally takes us back to my childhood, so I can say it was a lifetime, because it all started when I was a schoolboy in what was then Palestine. Fortunate to read and study the Old Testament in its original language, mm-hmm. which is very important. It makes a great difference. And we reach chapter 6 of Genesis, which is the story of the deluge.
Yes.
And not too many people have noticed, and one reason for that is that many biblical commentators prefer not to notice. They just skip over those verses. But the biblical tale of the deluge of Noah and the ark and what happened is preceded by 8 very enigmatic verses. And the most recalled, the most renowned of them, which is sometimes the subject, favorable subject of Sunday preachers, is that verse that says that those were the days just before the deluge, those were the days when there were giants upon the earth.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very familiar verse. And I, being 8, 9 years old, raised my hand and said, "Excuse me, teacher, but why do you say giants when the word in the Bible, the Hebrew word, is Nephilim, which means those who had come down, presumably from the heavens to earth?" And he said, "Sitchin, sit down. You don't question the Bible."
Don't ask those questions,
right.
Of course not.
But I was not questioning the Bible. I was questioning an interpretation.
The etymology.
That question stuck in my mind. What did the Bible mean by the word Nephilim? Why did it call them Nephilim? Because the Bible the language of the Bible, and I'm talking now about the Hebrew of the Old Testament, is very precise, very precise. And if the Bible called them those who had come down, there was a reason for it. And the answer has developed into three books and hopefully one more.
Well, you touch, no, you more than touch, you get very definitely into the Nephilim in the 12th planet. I noticed that you were going to be speaking out here at one of our really advanced universities, Claire Booth Prophet's place, where they get into all kinds of things. I heard her give a lecture one night on the 12th planet.
Tomorrow.
And tomorrow we're doing it. Let us just get into that. You'll be talking with Claire, Elizabeth Claire Prophet about her his discoveries at 3 o'clock tomorrow at Summit University. That's out at 26800 West Mulholland Highway out in Calabasas. And be there if you want to hear more about Mr. Sitchin's fascinating research. They have gotten into it very deeply out at the university.
Yes, I think they have. I think my books are required reading there, if I'm not mistaken.
Actually, her late husband wrote a book that had the very similar theme.
I'm not familiar with it.
I have it at the house, in fact. that was some time ago. Well, it struck me, Zechariah, as we look at your research, that you found some ancient writers, the Sumerians, and all through that period at that time, that were either the greatest science fiction writers of all time, or otherwise they were historians.
Well,
and I have a hard time buying that these ancient gentlemen could come up with rockets and clones and people from other planets and nuclear wars from their point of reference. So perhaps they were historians rather than science fiction writers.
Well, I believe so, Bill, and I hope that I have put together enough evidence. As you mentioned, it is not only written evidence, not only the actual ancient texts, which are very detailed and very effective in bringing to life what they have known or they have seen, but it is also accompanied by pictorial evidence, because the Sumerians, whom you mentioned, who are really the origin of all the so-called mythologies of all the ancient peoples, Greeks included, were also very prolific artists. They are really the inventors not only of many firsts in technology or in literature or in education or in medicine or in concepts of law and justice and so on. They were also the inventors, if you want, of the rotary press, because they used to cut small cylinders about on the average an inch high of very hard stone, sometimes semi-precious stone, and they engraved, nobody yet knows how, they engraved minutely pictorial depictions in reverse as a negative into those cylinders. Then they rolled them on clay, on wet clay, and when the clay dried, you had a permanent record of the positive. So this is really the idea of the rotary press, which we think is a 20th century invention, but that was used 6,000 years ago. And their tales, if we want to call them that, are very detailed. They tell us that people from another planet, which they called Nibiru, meaning planet of the crossing. Its symbol, by the way, was the cross. So the cross, too, is not an innovation going back to the times of Jesus, but preceded Jesus by at least 4,000 years and was the symbol of that planet. They said that there is one more planet in our solar system. They not only named all the planets, some of which, Bill, as you know, we ourselves in modern times have discovered only about 100 or just 50 years ago. Pluto, for example, was discovered about 50 years ago. They knew of all those planets. They described them, how they look. They depicted them in the correct order and in the right relative sizes.
Wonder how they got that information.
Well, this is really the question that answers your question, is it fiction or is it fake? Because they depicted the whole solar system with the sun in the center, by the way, not as the Greeks after them said the earth is in the center. They showed all the planets and one more. And they said that that planet, and they had a cosmology describing how it happened to become a member of the solar system. They said this is the 12th member of the solar system. That's the title of my first book, The 12th Planet. And they said that once every 3,600 years, that planet at its perigee comes at its closest point to Earth, at which time there have been comings and going between Earth and that planet, going back to about 450,000 years ago. So though they lived, their civilization is dated to about 6,000 years ago. They told us about events that happened almost 500,000 years ago. And they, in their text, not only depicted those members of the solar system and how they came into being, they also had, for example, astronomical texts that gave the distances between the planets. Now, you would ask, why do people whom we would consider primitive 6,000 years ago, why would they need to know the distance between Neptune and Pluto? Right. Okay. They called the Earth, as another illustration, they called Earth the seventh planet. Now, we all know, because we went to school, we all know that Earth is the third planet, because from the sun there's Mercury, Venus, and then Earth. Now, who would call Earth the seventh? Only someone who is counting from the outside in, because then they would call Pluto the first, Neptune the second, Uranus the third, Saturn, Jupiter, Mars the sixth, and Earth would indeed be the seventh planet. Now, when someone asked them, as they asked themselves perhaps, how do you know all that? How do you know that there's one more planet? How do you know about all the planets that could not be seen with the naked eye? How do you know that Earth is the seventh? How do you know that there is water out there on the outer planets, things that we are just beginning to find out through the Pioneer spacecraft? How do you know all that? They say, those who came from that planet told us. So it is a complete circle here. If there is such a planet, how did they know about it? They say those who came from it told us.
Right.
Now, if those came and did tell them, then there is such a planet. So either, as you said, it is better than Asimov, right?
Right.
Or it is true.
As I recall when we talked last, that there was some word from the Naval Observatory that the concept of a 12th planet can be accepted.
Yes. Well, the astronomers, and I think I ought to make it clear, the astronomers call this Planet X. And by X, they mean two things. One, X is a mystery planet, a planet we don't know about. Or they mean it X for the Roman 10. Because technically, if you do not consider in the list of 12 the sun and the moon, you have sun, moon, and only 10 planets. So we know about 9, so this would be a 10th planet. The Sumerians, however, considered all these bodies as celestial bodies, members of a solar system. They said there's a sun, there's a moon, which they considered as a celestial body in its own right for reasons that they gave. And
well, many scientists look upon our moon as a tandem planet to us now.
Yes, some think so too now, because indeed, Bill, everything since my book was published at the end of 76, everything that was discovered since then in almost 9 years, be it in astronomy, be it in geology, be it in biology, be it in artificial insemination or in vitro creation of human life, everything confirms. There's been no discovery that contradicts. Everything confirms the Sumerian knowledge.
Well, you have to look at evidence, and you have to look at truth. When you find some scholars that were around 5 or 6,000 years ago that are talking about things with great accuracy that we don't even know about and are beginning to find out about, and it still holds up as factual,
right,
then we have to look very, very hard at it, don't we?
I hope so.
There's an amazing story in your new book, which is published by Avon, by the way, The Wars of Gods and Men. And in just a moment, I'd like for you to kind of give us a little thumbnail sketch and whet our appetite, if you may. I'm Bill Jenkins, with me tonight, and I'm so delighted that he's in studio with us, is Zechariah Sitchin, whose work is monumental in every one of his books. His newest, The Wars of Gods and Men, The Twelfth Planet, and Stairway to Heaven are must in your bookshelves, as far as I'm concerned, and I hope you get them all. We'll be back in a second. Celestials, or alien beings, if you want to call them that, from another planet, who had a very profound impact upon the formation of human life as we know it, as far as that goes on this planet, and certainly our societies. Some of their problems and wars got carried over to our planet and among our people, and we have picked up that warlike attribute of theirs. I wish we had left that one along the way, but I guess it was sort of inherited. But
yes, it was. Bill, before the break, you asked me to try and sum up.
Yeah. Give us a fascinating thumbnail sketch, because I know the audience is going to want to know more.
Well, I'll do my best, because it took many years to write it, and there are many pages and many illustrations to
read. I'm always doing that.
I
want you to put 12 years of work into 2 minutes.
In 12 minutes, right. Anyway, as you said in your introduction, those who had come to Earth, and at this point, I think we can assume that the listeners are at least going along with us, that beings from another planet in our own solar system had come to Earth about 500,000 years ago.
But I want to point out again that this is not something fanciful that you have conjured up in your mind. This is the information that you're getting from the ancient Sumerians and other ancient texts and writings that are found.
Including the Old Testament.
Including certainly that one. So it's not fantasy here. It very well could be historical data. And that's the way I want you to look at it.
Right. So they came here, and the first point to be borne in mind is that they came here for their own reasons. They also did not come here because they were traveling from A to B and crash-landed here or just happened to pass by this small speck of dust we call Earth in universal terms. They came here for a purpose, because on their planet, they were facing extinction. The reason was, and here I must distinguish between what is written in the text and what I surmise from them. I surmise that their problem was that they were losing atmosphere on their planet. And in order to keep it, in order to retain what they had, their scholars, their scientists, discovered that if they could suspend gold particles and create like an envelope of gold particles around their atmosphere, they could go on surviving on their planet. Now, they have found out that there is gold on Earth, on this so-called seventh planet. And the story of how that happened is told in a text that, again, was originally written down for the first time by the Sumerians. The reason it was written down the first time by them is that they were the first ones to have writing.
Mm-hmm.
But we found it, our scholars and archaeologists have found it, principally preserved in a Hittite version. The Hittites are the ancient peoples of Anatolia, of what is today Turkey. And the tale is one of a usurpation of powers, of a revolt on their planet, where the then ruler was deposed by someone called Anu, and that deposed ruler escaped in a spaceship. The description leaves no room for a doubt that he escaped on a spaceship from their planet, Nibiru, to what the text, the Hittite text says, to dark Yud Earth. This is how Earth looked to them from space, as a dark Yud planet.
We found out it does look like that, doesn't it?
And he discovered that there's gold on Earth. And in order to come back into good graces, or maybe in order to survive, the evidence which I bring out in my new book, The Wars of Gods and Men, is that both he and his descendants, especially his grandson, were reinstated into some position of influence because of his discovery. And about one orbit of their planet, which is about 4,000 years, about one orbit later, when they again were in a position to come and go between their planet and Earth, a mission to Earth came from their planet. The leader of that mission is named in the text. His name, his title, was Enki, which meant Lord Earth. He splashed down in the waters of the Persian Gulf, and the splashing down is described. Their garb as fishmen, if you want to use the term, is described even pictorially. He led a party of 50. They waded ashore. They found a spot at the head of the Persian Gulf. They found there, if you want to call it, Earth Station 1. They called it Eridu, which literally meant home away from home. And all the names that we have today for our planet, which in English is Earth, or in German, Erde, come from that word, Eridu.
Is that right? Eridu.
And then the story goes on.
Can you hold the story for just a second?
Okay.
Because we have to do something. It's fascinating. And let me remind those that are with us to get your questions ready for Zechariah. But I do want to hear the rest of that, but you know how it is around here. Was it Jim's new book? It's out on Avon. Zechariah is sitting right here with us in the studio and was in the process of giving us a thumbnail sketch, and you have me on the edge of my seat there. Continue.
Okay, thank you, Bill. So this is, Bill, how they happened to come to Earth for a purpose in search of gold. And that the beginning of that was a conflict on their planet. This is important to remember. Now, when the first efforts to obtain the gold by distilling the waters of the Persian Gulf failed, they faced the key problem of whether to abandon the whole project and thus perhaps accept their own extinction on their planet, or to resort to other means of obtaining gold.
Now, they wanted the gold to suspend in the air to form more or less a greenhouse effect over their planet. It's amazing that the ancient Sumerians would know about a greenhouse effect.
One of many amazing things.
Yes, right.
So they decided to do it the hard way, and they went into a mining operation in southern Africa. And by the way, in one of my books, I forget now which one, I do mention that archaeologists in South Africa have discovered evidence that their mines were worked 30, 40, 80,000 years ago, way before anybody we can imagine would have done that. And in order to carry out this mass-scale operation on Earth, 900 of them were sent to Earth. 600 landed on Earth, again in groups of 50. 300 operated space stations and shuttlecraft, which collected the refined ore and would then transfer it periodically to a mothership that would take it to their planet. in charge of that operation, the supreme commander on Earth, was another son of the ruler who usurped the powers of Anu, and his name, his title, his epithet was Enlil, which meant Lord of the Command, Commander-in-Chief. Now, the two of them, Enki and Enlil, were half-brothers. If we have time tonight, I'd like to go at some other point into this whole question or aspect of half-brothers and half-sisters, because many things that we have done or that the biblical patriarchs have done and the rules they lived by stem from that. But anyway, this fact that two half-brothers, both contending for the right to be the one to inherit the throne on their planet, that both of them came to Earth, one a scientist, a metallurgical expert, a genius in construction, to whom the construction of the pyramids of Giza has to be attributed and not to any pharaoh, and the other a commander, a military man, a tough guy. His epithet was the bull. He's even depicted as a bull.
You needed both these personalities in order to carry out this mission.
So you have these two different leaders, half-brothers, both contenders for the succession to the throne on their planet. They both end up on this small planet, and thus the conflicts, the rivalries, even the rivalry for the love of their half-sister. They both had the same half-beautiful half-sister who was the chief medical officer on Earth. All that has developed in time, we're talking about 500,000 years, into what I call the Pyramid Wars. There were two of them. One was more localized. One was almost a global war. And then this conflict, once they made peace, carried in to their sons, because each one of them had a son. And then the sons were the contenders. And that contention between the two sons of the two leaders led in the year 2024 BC, precisely 4,000 years ago, to the use of nuclear weapons on Earth. So, in a few weeks, actually, I think it's August 6th, we would be marking what we think is the 40th anniversary of the first use ever of atomic weapons on Earth when an atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima. But it's not so. It is 4,000 years. And this is really what the new book, The Wars of Gods and Men, picks up this story from the point of view of the rivalries, because each book can be read independently, because each book tells the story, though it brings it ever closer to our time. This last book ends with the days of Abraham, who was Abraham, and what was his role in those earth-shaking events.
So the first nuclear holocaust was 2024 B.C.
Right, 4,000 years ago, not 40 years ago.
Where was it?
The weapons, and there were seven weapons. The details, Bill, if somebody would read the text I'm quoting, are so vivid. It's as if a reporter from your station, from ABC, was witnessing and was reporting. The tremendous flash, seven weapons were used, seven devices. The tremendous flash, the mushroom cloud, the darkness that followed the brightness, and the spread, this gradual spread of the mushroom, of the nuclear cloud, carried by the prevailing winds eastward from the shores of the Mediterranean Sea, from the Sinai Peninsula, gradually towards Mesopotamia, bringing to an end, to an abrupt end, the Sumerian civilization. It took 70 years for Mesopotamia, for the land to come out of the poisoning. The waters was poisoned. All the plants withered. All life perished. It took 70 years for Mesopotamia to be habitable again, just from the nuclear cloud, not from the explosions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the process of exploding those devices over the Sinai Peninsula, and the reason they did it was that there was a spaceport there, in the process, another area, which was considered an area of sinful cities, and why they were considered sinful is explained in the Sumerian text, that was the event of the upheavaling, to use the biblical term, of Sodom and Gomorrah, which Abraham witnessed.
Mm-hmm.
So it all happened
at
the same time in the year 2024 B.C.
And those lands prior to that, or at least as you study those lands, they were once very fertile and green.
Very fertile.
And they really haven't recovered from that Holocaust then at all?
Not that area in the south of the what is called the Dead Sea, or in the Bible the Salt Sea, was flooded because the barrier at the southern end of the Dead Sea was breached by the explosions, and the waters after the seven cities were wiped out, the waters flooded that area, but there is still radiation in that area to this day after 4,000 years.
Do we have any idea of how large the devices were that were used?
Well, there are NASA photographs, which unfortunately we can't show your listeners now, but I reproduced them in the book, that from space, you know, from a spacecraft, that show an immense crater where the spaceport, I claim, was, and the cracks that run through almost half the peninsula as a result of those explosions. So the power must have been tremendous. And to this day, the plane, there's a plane there, is strewn for miles on end with broken up pieces of blackened stone, for which no scholar, no scientist has an explanation. How could an area of miles and miles around be covered with broken up stones, all black?
One of the things they probably won't accept is a theory that there was a nuclear explosion there.
Well, let them then explain the crater.
Explain it some other way.
Right.
Well, as you can see, we're off for a journey tonight in the mind, you and I, with Zachariah Sitchin, who is here. His book is called The Wars of Gods and Men. You've gotten just a touch of it. It's fascinating. But the thing of it is, it's not something that Zachariah made up. It's something that he found in the ancient text. And as we pointed out earlier, they were really terrific science fiction writers with a grip on the future that is unreal. Or they were very good historians. And to go along with you, Zachariah, that
Thank
it was
you.
The latter, that they were historians. And we'll be back and we'll start talking to you. You ready to field some questions? Because I know you've probably generated a few among the better interrogators of this show, and that's the audience.
Fine.
Ready?
We'll
be back to that in just a moment. Welcome to Open Mind.
Yes, good evening, Bill. Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask your guest if he's familiar with the work of Erich von Däniken, who wrote a few books years ago based on the Chariot of the Gods theory. And I was wondering, if so, does his theories tend to reinforce Mitch von Däniken's? Because his theories were that there were extraterrestrial visitors as well.
Well, the answer to your question is yes. Now, to go into somewhat greater detail, I think I could best answer it in the following way. Soon after my first book was published, I was invited to share podium with Mr. von Däniken at some conference. That event was preceded by a press conference. I came to the room where the press conference was being held. That was the first time I ever met Mr. von Däniken, and he me. In front of all the newsmen and reporters that were gathered there, he came towards me. He embraced me. He turned to the newsmen and said, "Well, you people keep writing that I don't know what I'm talking about, But here is the man who proves me right.
So you two are of like minds there in many, many areas. Does that answer your question, Dwight?
Yes, thank you.
All right. Thank you for your question. It was a good one. We'll be back in just a moment. Here, Barbara, hello.
Hi, good evening, Bill.
Right.
I was curious to know where Mr. Sitchin's books were available in the Los Angeles area.
Well, they should be available in all bookstores, and if the one that you go to, it's not there, just insist that they order it.